Can employee incentives turn into entitlements? That's the topic of my conversation with Roe Crosby, the founder, president, and CEO of Taro International. How well-meaning efforts to incentivize workers can often backfire, and what you can do that really works. That is coming up next. Insight on Business, the News Hour, is made possible through the support of AARP, the real possibilities that are available for family members no matter their age, from Fraud Watch to creating livable communities. Learn more at AARP Iowa.
Insight on Business, the News Hour, is made possible through the support of the HR professionals at Oasis, a paychecks company. Learn how to grow your small business or nonprofit by outsourcing your HR and payroll functions. OasisAHR.com.
It is the Business News Hour. Thanks so very much for clicking through. With us is the President and Chief Executive Officer, as well as the founder of Taro International, a training organization based in central Iowa. And we're going to be talking about the role of entitlement and all that that means to business and their employees. Ro, welcome back. Good to see you again.
It's a pleasure to be here, Michael.
You had a big opportunity just recently. You were speaking at the Iowa Association of Business and Industry, ABI, about this idea of employee entitlement. What is that?
Yes, it was a very exciting opportunity. I was the opening keynote speaker for their Taking Care of Business conference that also featured Peggy Noonan. And when I met with the ABI organizers, I said, what's on people's minds, on your members' minds? And one of the things was employee engagement. And so the research I presented in that keynote was how very quickly employer attempts at engagement end up manifesting into employee entitlement.
Okay. We're going to have to unpack all of that, because everybody that we talk to in the business world wants engaged employees. And, and that's important to the success and productivity of any company. Is that accurate?
It's absolutely accurate. We know that engaged employees, they are more productive, they are happier, they tell their friends, it's a healthier environment for the workers, the customers like to be there. So certainly trying to create a culture of engagement is on everyone's mind, and companies are doing surveys to find out how engaged people are. We know about two-thirds of employees self-report as being either disengaged or actively disengaged. So the intention of the employer is totally pure. They want to create an environment where people are engaged.
All right. So, and if we do that, according to the synopsis, if we do that in perhaps the wrong way, we end up with entitled employees rather than engaged employees. Explain that.
We do. A common misperception managers have is, let's look to rewards. Let's look to incentives. And if we incent certain behaviors, we'll see it. If we give the employees things that are valuable to them, they'll be more engaged. And that's often disconnected from what the work itself is. So that's an attempt to tap external motivation. I've got a wonderful story, I think, that exemplifies this. So picture India, and this is back when it was under British rule. So the story is an old one, but it is, people see this happen in their companies all the time. And they had a problem with cobra snakes. And they were plentiful, and they were roaming around, and that's not a good thing.
These
cobras are bad things. So the government, the leaders, figured, okay, well, we need to make these cobras go away. I know, let's create an incentive. And they put a bounty on them. And so any citizen who could produce a dead cobra would get paid. There would be compensation for it. So when they started compensating for dead cobras, can you imagine what happened?
I suspect that everybody went out hunting cobras.
There was some of that. And then a cottage industry emerged, which was called cobra farms. And people started raising cobras. Yes, absolutely, they did. And so it was an absolute way to make some money. And the government eventually figured out what was going on. And they said, oh, wow, this is so not what we intended to have happen with this incentive. So they removed the bounty from the cobras. Now, if you happen to be a cobra farmer, and now your product is not valuable, what are you going to do? They released them. So now you've got more live cobras than you had in the first place roaming around, and it was the result of an incentive that was well-intended.
Sure.
Because people can get really creative about that. So I shared that story at the ABI conference, and a leader came up to me after. She says, I have to tell you a funny story. When I was a kid, I used to leave the door open of the house to try to shoo the flies into the house. And I said, that's interesting. Why did you do that? And she says, because my parents paid me a few cents for every fly I swatted. So she was just trying to create
inventory.
Yeah, if we can get some more flies in here, I can make some money. So it's funny when employers hear these stories because they know they're creating cobra farms all over their organizations. We see it in households. We see it in companies. And it's a well-intended company that's creating an incentive to get one outcome. And we've heard some terrible stories. When you incent salespeople to sell a certain number of mortgages or a certain number of accounts, we've all seen those stories on the front pages where they're actually going to lie to customers or create fraudulent customer accounts because of the incentives that are in place that were intended to be engagement opportunities.
Wow. All right. There must be an answer to this then. If so many companies are creating engagement tools that turn into people who are then entitled, and once that entitled or that engagement, that carrot goes away, then they go back to their old ways and productivity slides. What do you do? How do you right the ship?
Yes, thank you for asking that. So there's two things that are important for any manager to know. Number one is that there's two ways to tap motivation, internal and external factors. So the rewards, the incentives, the carrots, the sticks, the punishments, those are all external motivators. That's what the pay for the dead cobras was, and that was what paying for the killing of the flies was. We can use external incentives, but we have to be just so careful to link them to the type of outcomes that we want to see. But the most powerful thing that leaders can do who are trying to create a culture of engagement is tap into internal motivation. And there's three things that do that. The most powerful inner motivation that any of us has is the play motive. If I love what I'm doing. Now, we're not talking about ping pong tables in the office. We're talking about I love the work I'm doing.
Right.
So when leaders can assign people tasks that they love, that's the most powerful form of engagement. The second one is called the purpose motive. So I might not like what I'm doing, but if I've bought into the mission, so I like the outcome of what I'm doing. I might not like the actual activity, but I like the customers I'm serving or I like the outcome. And then the third one is what they call potential, and that's an outcome of an outcome. So I might not like what I'm doing. I might not even care about the customers I'm serving, but I'm doing this because I'm developing myself professionally. So when a manager says to an employee, this is a stepping stone job, they're tapping into the potential motive. Mm-hmm. If you do these things, it's going to have some benefits in the long term.
One of the very first example that you gave is having people do what they love to do. But my experience over the years that many times managers or owners don't often take the time to get to know what their employees might or might not love to do.
Yes, that's one of the big challenges is to be able to apply the play motive for engagement. That means you have to talk to the people.
Yeah.
And
imagine that.
You know, for some managers, that's to be avoided at all costs. And actually, in the defense of managers, when you do talk to people and say, what would you find to be motivating, they will often say incentives.
Because that's easy.
It's easy, and we're just deluding ourselves. You know, yes, certainly, that's the first answer. Pay me more money, give me time off, bring in the beer keg on Friday afternoon. Those kind of things we think are what we want, but what we know is at a deep level, we want to do the things that we love. So an employer who watches someone, what is their hobby at work?
Yeah.
If they've got some spare time, what are they doing that's work-related? Because you can be absolutely sure that's the play motive.
And at the interview process, in the HR department, when you're looking for employees, should you keep that in mind?
Oh, absolutely. You want to not only find somebody who's got the skills to do the job, but someone who's motivated to do the job. So not just self-motivated to bring themselves to work, but someone who actually finds that work exciting. So if you know the job involves 40% travel, and you find out in an interview they don't like to travel,
yeah, but
You've got a mismatch. It's not that they can't travel. They don't like to. And so you're going to put engagement at risk. But if somebody loves to travel, a job that's got 40 to 60% travel is a good motivational fit for them.
And so when we talk about concrete ways in which we can motivate people to do whatever, we've talked about those three things. But here at Taro International, how do you do what you do with motivation of the folks that work at Taro?
Oh, thank you for asking that. We think an awful lot about inner motivation because we teach this. So we do talk to the people and we observe them and we'll say, you know, I notice that you're doing something that it appears you really enjoy. Talk about that. We've got a new member on the team that just loves doing Excel spreadsheets. I quite frankly don't like doing that. So I'm thrilled to have someone here that does that. And since he finds so much reward just from doing that activity, then we find out who needs that kind of work, because there's lots of things here at Taro that can benefit from someone who does that.
So again, finding the person's strength, whatever that strength happens to be, and what they enjoy.
And what they enjoy, absolutely. And some people get really excited about doing programming and coding, and some people would rather jump off the building.
Right.
So if you can link people to the type of things that they like to do, and it takes more than just asking them what they like. We have to be able to watch them and see what they're good at.
You know, the mission-driven access to having a productive employee, I think, is also interesting. Much has been said about millennials and that they are mission-driven. If they believe in whatever the mission of the company is, that they will work well with that company.
Yes, millennials are speaking with their feet, and they are going to the companies to work, and actually the ones that they're customers to. They are flattering companies with their business if they share a mission. So trying to find out what's important to even the customers you serve, not just your employees, is a recipe for getting customer and employee engagement and more long-term sustainability.
Well, all of that, again, here we go. All of that would require a business owner, whether you're in retail or whether you're B2C, B2B, whatever it happens to be. You need to be able to articulate what it is that your customer wants.
That's exactly right.
And that takes time.
That does take time.
Okay.
It's worth it. It's worth
it. But in the end, yeah. Because in the end, you not only have an engaged employee, you don't have an entitled employee, you have an engaged employee, and you very well may have an engaged consumer base.
Exactly.
Wow.
And can I give you an example
of the
entitlement piece so that I connect those dots just a little more clearly? Because we talked about incentives going wrong. But this was a client of ours. So CEO of a business that's got a number of offices across the state of Iowa, 700 employees. And at the end of the year, and it was a good business year, good financial year for the business, she wanted to thank all of her employees. So to do that, she bought each of them a very expensive ham, a Christmas ham. It was a $70 ham, one of those fancy spiral cut, you know, the really fancy ones, and wanted to have everybody receive this just as an extension of her gratitude for them being part of the team. Well, can you guess what happened when everybody got their Christmas ham?
Maybe. Some people didn't eat ham?
Thank you. Yes. So some were grateful. So there was a few that said
right.
Thank you. Several of them said, can I have the money instead? Several said, I don't eat ham. And several said, I don't celebrate Christmas.
Ooh.
So now we've got this situation where if you think 700 employees at $70 a person, this is an enormous investment that this well-intentioned chief executive made to thank the employees, and it wasn't received in the way that she had intended at all. And then fast forward a year later, and now we've got an entitlement. Hey, last year we all got this thing.
Yeah.
So let's make an employee committee to decide how the company should spend the money this year. And it had never been connected to business results. It was just, I really appreciate you as an employee. So they forgot that it was related to business outcomes. It was now an entitlement. And then try to get rid of that later, because now it's an expectation every year we're going to get that. We see that with holiday bonuses. We see that with casual workdays. When companies reward people with casual workdays, you know, if we meet this goal, you can dress casual on Friday. Before you know it, they haven't made that connection.
Yeah.
And now they've got ideas on what else should be casual. And then we have to have committees on, is this T-shirt count? And they're totally far away from what the goal of the business was.
Again, Roke, it's fascinating stuff to think about. The psychology that goes into just managing a business and allowing yourself to know what's going on with your employees and your customers. I think Roe Crosby is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, from Tarot International. How do you get to this point? I mean, you spoke at the Iowa Association of Business and Industry. People came up and said, oh, wow, this really resonates with us. But what's the next step? I mean, we can talk about this for 15 minutes, but if you're not committed to a plan of action, you know, all's lost.
Yeah, what we hope we do with programs such as this one, so thank you for inviting me to be on and at keynote speeches such as at the IABI conference, is to create an awareness. Yeah. And we hope that leaders go away and think very carefully about the environments of entitlement they're actually fostering. And once we can start to diagnose what's going on, then we can start making meaningful changes. And the good news is people are pretty predictable. If we assign them to tasks that they're suited to and they enjoy, that will lead to employee engagement. And quit trying to buy their motivation. Mm. Certainly we have to pay them a fair wage, but actually paying them an awful lot more might make them happy, but it will not make them work harder.
You know, one of the things that is a constant in our house is my bride will always tell me, I appreciate getting a salary for what I do, but it really means something when my boss, the owner of the company, says, that was a good job, congratulations, I really mean it.
You know what? That is such an important point, Michael. Some of the most powerful engagement tools that tap external motivation, because the manager saying thank you or writing the thank you note, that's external motivation. Yeah. It's noticing. Some of the most powerful things that we can do to tap into engagement are the cheapest.
Exactly.
To just sincerely notice what someone's doing and tell them why it mattered, or write the personal note. How many of us have received a personal thank you note 10, 20 years ago and still have it?
Mm-hmm.
That has much more longer lasting power than the pizza party or the keg at the end of the day on Friday that turns into an entitlement.
Her name is Roe Crosby. Ladies and gentlemen, she's the founder, president, and CEO of Tarot International. We've been talking about the difference between creating a culture of expectations and entitlement and how you go about really getting employees engaged. Ro, thanks so much for doing this.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Once again, that was Ro Crosby, the founder, CEO, and president of Tarot International. We will have links to Tarot up on our radio blog. Well, that about wraps it up for another broadcast day. Thanks so very much for being with us. For all of us associated with the Business News Hour, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator. Sales and marketing falls to Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett, exclusively for the Business News Hour. For Ro Crosby and our entire crew, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful day. Be safe, be well, be careful, most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.